He's the editorial director now for Coda Collection. Hey, Greg, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good, John.
So tell me what tell me what I need to know about Muddy Waters and his Chicago connection. I know he wasn't born here, moved here as a teenager, learned to play the harmonica and guitar. What do I need to know enough about Muddy Waters?
Yeah, he was born in Mississippi, moved here in the 40s. Basically the inventor of the modern urban blues, the Chicago blues. The blues had been largely an acoustic art form in its southern origins. Muddy came here in the 40s as part of the big black migration from the south, the sharecroppers coming to the big cities in the north to find work that was better paying than, picking cotton in the fields. And Muddy was among them. Muddy didn't have to work too many day jobs, though. He got established pretty quickly here, electrified the blues, mainly so that he could be heard in those clubs, those noisy clubs, and, basically created the template for what we know as Chicago blues.
So he did to the blues what Bob Dylan did to folk, huh?
He modernized it for sure.
Yeah. And I hear that twangy harmonica, big beat in a pause, big beat in a pause. Is that all signature to Chicago blues, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, that rhythmic style. I mean, it's built in with the songwriting. Muddy was a great songwriter, but Willie Dixon was the guy who wrote a lot of the songs that Muddy popularized, that became huge hits. I think Muddy's way of delivering a song was unparalleled. He was a great singer, very good guitar player. He attracted the best musicians, including Willie Dixon on bass. Walter Jacobs on guitar or on harmonica was a giant, Little Walter. He was the guy probably playing the harmonica on that cut on the track he played. He basically created a template for his quintet, the blues quintet that he built in the early 50s was had hit after hit, and that sound traveled all around the world. When Muddy played Newport in 1960, the Newport Jazz Festival, that was kind of like a big coming out party for him. He was playing a big festival in front of a largely white audience, and people were just shocked at how stunningly great he was. He just took it over, and that kind of established his name. Those records that he made in Chicago for Chess Records in the 50s and early 60s started filtering out around the world. That's why he had all these white musicians suddenly realizing how important the blues was. Artist after artist that I talked to said, what was it about the blues in the early 60s, mid-60s, that translated so well to this young white audience? And what they heard was a maturity that rock and roll didn't have yet. Eric Clapton told me it sounded like adults making this music. It was very a mature form of electric music. Steve Miller, same thing. Steve Miller, a kid from Madison, Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, came to Chicago to study the blues with the foot of the masters like Buddy Guy and like Muddy Waters. So he was learning from the greats because of the maturity that he heard in that sound, and Muddy sort of personified that. I mean, he always seemed older than his years, and the sound in his voice, that bravado, that gravitas that he had, was extremely influential second generation of rock and rollers, from the Rolling Stones, Paul Butterfield, all those artists learned and adapted what Muddy was doing in Chicago in the clubs in the 50s and 60s. The power of that, there was a certain simplicity, but not just anybody can do it. Again, Clapton, I said, well, how do you see the blues as a long surviving art form? Do you see that going on for centuries? And he said, yes, it's absolutely classical music. It's what it is. You have to be, these guys don't often get compared to people like Mozart, but I think in his field, Muddy Waters was a Mozart, because the nuances and the between the notes, the black notes, as they call it, the way you phrase things, it's the difference between just a normal bar band and a genius. And, Muddy was brilliant at sort of the way he could inflect words, the way the nuances and phrasing of the way he played the guitar, of the way he sang. He was a one-of-a-kind artist, you know, a true, true artist, an innovator, a pioneer. And, you know, what you're hearing there is kind of a distillation of that sound mm-hmm. into its rawest elements. It's extremely attractive immediately because it's just so raw and powerful. But at the same time, the more you listen to it, the more you realize the nuance in that performance. You know, you could hear 100 people sing that song, but only one guy can sing it like Muddy Waters could.
So his home's on South Lake. The home that he moved to is on the South Lake Park Avenue in the North Kenwood neighborhood on the south side. And it has been granted landmark status by the Commission on Chicago Landmarks, preliminarily anyway. I guess his great-granddaughter lives there, and they're trying to make it a... I'm not exactly sure what the point is of the Mojo Muddy Waters House Museum. Maybe a place you'd go and tour, huh?
Well, it would be, hopefully they turn it into something of a historical site that has some real value to it. It's, the idea is to make it into something of a museum, you know, similar to like Motown in Detroit or, Stax. Records in Memphis. We have Chess Records here in Chicago on the south side, South Michigan Avenue. But I think the addition of a Muddy Waters home, it's got a lot of potential in terms of here was the home where he, in many ways, conceived many of these greatest songs, you know, that 20-year period that he lived in that home from the early 50s into the early 70s. And, you think about the people who lived there. I mean, he lived in the lower part of that building, on the upper level, he had people like Chuck Berry and Willie Dixon living there for a time. It's like, there's so much history in that house. And I think if they do it right, they could really create something amazing. Chicago has justifiably been criticized, the city of Chicago, in not properly recognizing the history of Chicago blues, and here's an opportunity to do it right.
That's really interesting, really, really helpful. I'm glad I found you this morning. What's new with you these days, by the way? I got a minute left here. What's Greg Cott up to over at Coda Collection? What's the latest movie you put your finger on?
Well, we've added a bunch of new films. We're having a great success with this Dave Grohl movie, What Drives Us, a movie about a documentary that Dave made about what it was like to be a touring musician, and interviewed just about everyone from the Beatles to Guns N' Roses about the whole idea of, every band starts in a van. You're married to five, six people at a time, and you're traveling the country in this little van, playing these little clubs in out-of-the-way places, and that's how every band from the start of the rock and roll era got its start. And he's done an incredible homage to it, and it's been a kind of a big success for us the last few weeks. We've got a terrific new film by The Cure that's for something completely different, a one-of-a-kind show that they did at Meltdown Festival in 2018.
I'm glad.
Playing in a career-spanning set.
I'm out of time, Greg, but keep us posted on what you guys are doing at Coda Collection, codacollection.co, Coda, C-O-D-A, codacollection.co. Editorial Director Greg Cott. What a great resource he is for Chicago, too. It's nice to hear you, Greg. Thanks for helping us out today.
Thanks, John. Glad to be here. Thank you.
As always.